The stream is live. All right.
We're live.
To the video Bitcoin Jam. How are you guys?
Great. We can see all three of us.
Yeah, we're all here now.
It wouldn't be 12:10 on a Friday if we weren't.
Exactly.
Bitcoin Jam.
We miss you, DK. We're all figuring out the IT and whatever setup situation. So we can't wait to have you back with us.
I'm not the expert. I just take up space.
He's modest. He's definitely the expert in this group.
Are you going to be in studio next week?
I think next week, no, but the week after that, yes.
Okay.
So one more away week until I'm back.
Okay.
Beautiful.
We'll be patient.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm excited to see you guys in person some more because I feel like when we're in person, we always are generating a lot of stuff that are like, hey, let's talk about that on the show. Let's talk about that. And we've got our group chat teed up with a lot of stuff, but it's also fun to bump into you guys in person because I think we actually ended up generating more stuff that way.
Well, in the spirit of IRL generation, I was just telling Steve before we came in here, there is at least one, probably many, big brains at the Presidio Bitcoin office. And I'm not going to dox who it was, possibly Steve right here, but someone was scribbling on a whiteboard what looked to be some like fairly sophisticated cryptography and using NIP17 DMs to communicate with MCP servers. So I don't want to give away too much alpha. Also, I didn't understand it all myself and I'll have to go back and check, but felt a lot like that scene in Good Will Hunting where you're just walking by or maybe in The Beautiful Mind, someone just scribbling on the wall. You're like, shit, did we just find some breakthrough? So
this was the worst doxing ever because you actually said something and then you coughed and I didn't hear it, but I think everybody else heard it or it's on the recording and decipherable. So can you just say who it was?
Oh, I actually don't know who it was.
Like, he was joking it was me. Yeah. And if it was me, I must have done it in my sleep last night. Otherwise, I don't think it was.
It was definitely someone that's like deep in cryptography. So we have some guesses, but just like another cool thing at Presidio Bitcoin. You never know what you're going to find here. So
cool.
There's the alpha for all the listeners.
And I think there was a builder last night, yeah?
There was. Our third builder.
Do you want to give a little overview of what happened there?
Another good turnout, like several new folks each time, which is great. And let's see, we had Damien do a live vibe coding, kind of like you and Matt, DK and Matt's live vibe coding, the Twitch you've done a couple times. Because Damien came on, you know, unprepared, or like we took audience suggestions. So he did, it was like unplanned.
Which is even
harder, I think, than like what you and Matt are doing. Cause like, I think you guys at least have an idea of what you want to build ahead of time and then you try it live. He didn't know ahead of time and he tried it live. So I think that was, it didn't result in exactly what we were hoping to build, but it definitely made progress. And I think it was educational for people. So I think that was compelling. And then it was great. One of the audience members, Pamela, who's come to all of them. I don't believe she has like a development background. So she did some vibe coding and then she showed off her vibe coding. So I think that's super cool to give like people new to this experience a little limelight to highlight that. And then
did Damien do it with Replit the way we saw Matt
Cursor,
did it before?
Cursor.
Did he do it? Yeah. Okay, cool.
Which there's pros and cons to that. I mean, it's definitely good to show different tools, I think. But like some of the audience member, I mean, Damien had a bunch of like rules set up and other configurations set up and a template, which any more, you know, a more advanced, sophisticated vibe coder would have all that stuff. And it definitely improves the experience. But you don't need any of that to start. So I think it gave the impression of like being more intimidating than it is, at least to start. But we spoke to that. So.
Yeah, and I think it would be cool in future, you know, events to do, like you said, like Replit. It seems like that's probably easier for some of the like first timers, but also stuff like we should do a Goose one in the future so people can get different flavors. I think one of the interesting things for me that I learned from the Damien vibe code, I don't think, did we stream it? I don't think we streamed it. Did we? No.
We now have the capabilities to live stream, but no one had the skill set that was there last night.
DK, we're missing you, bro.
Max and I joked before the show, anytime we have production issues in this show, Max and I are absolutely useless.
Yeah, we're just here to like look pretty on camera.
I'm like in the AV club.
We're just Yes.
Well, where's the IT? We can't do this.
I haven't discussed it this with other people who, such as you guys and Haley and others, for Builder, but like one of my takeaways, I think we want to cater to like beginners and advanced vibe coders. I think mm-hmm. both are important.
Yeah.
We want to be mm-hmm. very welcoming to beginners and patient, but we also want to appeal to advanced vibe coders, both because some people are at that advanced stage or close to it. And even for beginners,
yeah.
Even if they're at the beginner stage, I think they can get inspired by seeing what a more advanced setup can be.
Totally.
But we don't want to like only do advanced because then it feels too intimidating. So so we might want to actually structure it like with a beginner track and advanced track, and like each month we try to have one example.
Yeah, I like that.
That who shows off their beginner vibe coding mm-hmm. And like celebrate that, and then a more advanced one. And then to your point, Max, about the tools, like mm-hmm. we should rotate, show all the, over time, all the different tools should be shown.
Yeah. And so a couple things came out of the Damien vibe code for me, stuff we can learn for next time, but also I think just general like best practices. And you probably have a lot of thoughts on this, DK, but one is I think we can get better over time at scoping like what's reasonable to live vibe code in 15, 20 minutes. I think that's just mm-hmm. like a learning process of like, for example, Bob had proposed the idea of doing a feed of Noster notes where someone has locked Bitcoin or eCash to it. I think that probably would have been a little bit simpler and easier. We ended up instead doing Max's suggestion, which was really cool, of doing a blind auction. Actually, I think this could go totally viral, but a blind auction where the highest bid wins the entire pot. This is up your alley, DK, the gray area of the web.
I like that.
It's actually a genius idea. But I think that was probably a little bit sophisticated for 15, 20 minute vibe code, although he got really close. I think another big learning for me was like just having all of the tooling already set up. Like he had some dependencies and things already downloaded. But as an example, like one of the things that he did was he said, okay, he used Albi in their NWC libraries and everything they've already built for that. Noster Wallet Connect, those who aren't familiar with NWC. Anyways, and he said, here's the GitHub, just like take all the documentation, which is cool. Yeah. But a better way to do that in the future would be like, hey, here's the Albi MCP server, which already has all of that even more, sort of AI friendly and ready to go. So I think, having MCP servers set up. And then I think a third thing is, and maybe this goes back to the first one a little bit of like when we select ideas, we did have some cool ideas from Twitter. For example, Megalith, we tweeted beforehand, like, hey, who has ideas for what you want to see Damien vibe code? And he came up with some great ideas, like could we add Cashew or NWC payments into BitChat, which would be awesome, probably a little sophisticated also for a short vibe code. But one idea is we could maybe narrow down like the types of things, like, hey, here are like five examples of apps Damien agrees or whoever's vibe coding could get built. And like maybe on the fly, we pick one from the audience live or like slightly modify it, but like already have some consensus from the vibe coder of like, yeah, I'm pretty sure I could do that.
Yep, that's probably a good idea.
I was also going to say, just from some of the experience that I've had doing this stuff on the live stream with Matt is, we sort of tried a kind of a Bitcoin Lightning type of development process, this sort of feature set with the thing that we were doing this week. I don't know if you guys saw it, but we kind of failed to fully accomplish what we set out to do. And I think a lot of that is because the Lightning Bitcoin, even like the Noster stuff, just has such a smaller surface area of existing implementations for any kind of coding agent to really learn from that. That I think, if you try to do a web app of some sort, there's, how many millions of examples of that? It almost always gets that right. If you try to do anything touching Noster, Lightning, Bitcoin, it almost always gets it wrong, and you struggle so much to do that. And I think a good output of either the live streams that Matt and I are doing or stuff that we could do with Builder is create like reference GitHub repos, open source, how to do the thing. Because like, for example, we were trying to use Lexi, the non-custodial Lightning wallet, and they have a great SDK, but we kept running into similar problems, like the way it would try to import the variable, it would import the variable itself and not the actual secret. So I'm sure mm-hmm. that can be trained out of an LLM, or you could augment the knowledge with be like, hey, implement Lexi according to the instructions in this repo. And then I bet we could get it to work first time. But we tried it multiple times, reset. Matt tried it again offline and only got it working through like hours of struggle, literally. Whereas these things need to be very easy and sort of like you don't have to think about it if people are going to be able to build on top of them. They just need to sort of be defaults the way a lot of the web infrastructure is today.
Yeah, so I think that's a great lesson that you learned. Agree with what you said about creating, you know, some repos and examples. It also, it's like we should give a shout out to the Lexis, Albies, Sparks, Cashews, CDKs of the world.
Yeah.
They should all be incentivized to create repositories of examples.
100%.
I think Albies done some and they've created MCP and
yeah.
FuSats has done it as well. But just like we should promote that to all of these small companies or budding ecosystems because it only, you know, they have a vested interest in doing that.
And when things trip up, they kind of trip up in ways that you could argue, oh, I documented it, shouldn't have worked. It should have worked, so it should have figured it out. And I think rather than a team, like if you're the team building Lexi or the team building Spark or Albie, instead of saying it's documented, it should work, I believe that there's, you know, whoever's building that tool should try to vibe code something from scratch, assuming that that tool exists. And I think what you'll find, like with the Lexi example, we found the same problem that if you really read and understood the documentation well, you wouldn't screw up. But the LLMs continually kept screwing it up in the same kind of predictable ways. So I think the team should both build an MCP server, build the tool, then vibe code something with the tool and figure out all of the places where you get stuck, and then write instructions that says, hey, if you're an LLM, if you're trying to vibe code with this, it's frequent that you're going to run into this problem and this problem. Don't fall for this trap. Do this instead. So you effectively like teach it how to be successful with the process that you know will break. First identify the broken and then tell it how to fix those.
This is bringing up a really good point that you brought up before, DK, which is, we have GitHub today, but that's for humans. What does GitHub for machines look like in the first place? Like you're saying the Lexi team should publish that. Where? Like in GitHub? Like where should they publish it?
I think GitHub would definitely be sufficient for now. And Matt published a repo after our thing where he finally got it working. So I think we do have now a public GitHub showing how at least one example of Lexi being properly integrated. Mm-hmm. But I think when we did it live, it failed. And then when we did it, I think he did it offline and it still failed in the same way. And then he kind of struggled and got it to work. But if I wanted to start from scratch, say, I could probably know, like just because I know Matt and I know this process, I could know that he has this repo and find the repo and share it and say, don't just do the Lexi according to documentation, study this repo where we actually have it working successfully.
Yeah.
And then kind of run from there. And then if the teams could actually build those repos, and I think over time, the LLMs will figure it out.
Yeah.
But we're not at the state right now where you can just like write good documentation, it will definitely work.
How did you actually communicate with the LLM? Like, was it an MCP server? Did you do a separate file that's just like, hey, AIs, this is for you?
Well, so in the case of, we didn't use an MCP server for Lexi. Lexi, has an SDK. You can have it generate secrets with your mobile wallet. Mm. And then it has what's called a sidecar. And my understanding is that's just some other server that Lexi runs that accepts connections to your Lightning node that they set up and manage for you. But when you, basically the main problem is it was never able to launch the sidecar appropriately. And sidecars work and the Lexi secret works, but it failed in this kind of sort of stupid way, but it kept using Lexi _ sidecar _SDK ID instead of the actual ID. It just wasn't resolving the variable for some reason. I don't know why.
But where did you actually like call the attention of the LLM and say, hey, if you're an LLM, read this specific piece of text? Like, was that in the sidecar documentation, like the existing one you put at the beginning or the end? Or
no, so we were using Replit to do the session, as I think we will probably continue doing for that particular show. And so it was just in the thing. We said, hey, use Lexi. There's a thing called Lexi, and at first thought it was Lexi, and we had to say, no, it's Lexi, and here's the thing, and see if you can find the documentation. It's a Lightning Bitcoin thing, and, implement it, make it work. So we didn't give it a lot of direction at first, but then once it started failing, we got deeper into explaining how to make it successful. But it's just kind of a back and forth with the LLM.
Well, and I don't know if you've already talked to the Lexi team. If you haven't, you should definitely give them this feedback, but if you had access to their repo, like where would you suggest they put the like LLM file? Like, hey, LLM, this is the problem. Here's how we recommend solving it.
Probably could just be some sort of leaf off of their main documentation. Mm-hmm. And maybe like people who are trying to do it, if they ever run into people who have this problem, they could say, hey, Matt, DK, you want to do this? Point this leaf of our documentation to your LLM as a starting point for how LLM should do it. And I think over time, this is just general knowledge, you know, reading, writing, coding. It should be solved, but there's just so few examples, I think, that it keeps running into the same problem. So because there's so few examples, if we can give a very specific success happy path, I think that can unstick a lot of future development.
To be clear, at Builder number 2 last month, Matt vibe coded with Lexi under 15 minutes an entire application. So it's just, I think this new application they tried to vibe code, it just had a different approach that you hit some stumbling block.
Totally. No, I mean, I saw that. I was very impressed. I guess my general point is like, I don't yet understand. And maybe your point is just like the LLMs are smart, figure it out on its own. Like, what's the protocol to say, hey, LLM, look here. Like, human, look here, LLM.
Oh, it's just English. Yeah, the protocol is English. Hey, LLM, look here. And then
But you think it should literally be that direct, like, right out.
I think Max needs to vibe code some more.
Yeah.
I think Max just has vibe coding theoretically. Like, he's.
It is kind of funny.
You need to get your hands dirty.
I do need to get my hands dirty at some point. I know. I had my conversation with Drew where I felt kind of like similar to him, where it's like, I definitely do like the abstractions and theories.
I've encouraged you before, but I want to ask, why have you not done this yet? It is the most transformational thing happening in technology right now.
To be honest, I've had another priority. So you guys don't see this yet, but I'm actually quite excited. I just finished yesterday my new manifesto for building a new electricity grid and internet of energy. So that is some alpha. It will drop early next week. I've sent it to a few folks, but I've been pretty hard at work at that. So priority.
Did you work with an LLM to build that though?
I used Grok as a research assistant. And so I'm very, very skeptical of using, so actually I'll talk about my use of that. So I have been using LLMs, but I look, at the end of the day, I don't really necessarily see myself as an engineer or whatever. I'm excited and I hope I make progress on that. But I definitely see myself.
You don't need to see yourself as an engineer. You need to see yourself as a person who uses technology.
Yes. Okay. Fair enough. Let's say I look forward to that and I look forward to watching my horizons grow. However, I also believe we all have our natural proclivities, right? And my natural proclivities have always taken me into the realm of ideas, which is why I have my podcast, Ideas from the Edge.
Yeah.
And, you know, I was pretty skeptical of using AI at first because I do love to write. I do love to, you know, imagine, think, whatever. And, you know, I don't think I'll ever give up writing to the LLM because to me, writing is thinking. And it's like, that's like a skill I don't want to lose. If my mind, you know, atrophies in that direction, like that's a huge problem for me. But what I am becoming increasingly open to is using LLM as a friend, a research assistant, someone that we can work together.
It's like your partner.
It's my partner.
It doesn't take over for you.
Exactly. It doesn't take over for me. But I'll give some major caveats. So, you know, what I think the LLM is bad at right now is generating truly beautiful, novel ideas. And I think maybe in time I'll get better at like coaxing that. But I think one thing I'm very skeptical on is, you know, if our world or universe is an infinite sea of possibilities, right? And the LLM can, in theory, generate the same ones that I could or another human could. It still comes down to, you know, you have a limited, in this dimension, we have limited constraints, right? And so you still have to pick which ideas to remix or co-generate. And I think that for now, you're not replacing the human element of, I don't know, it's like cooking, like the weird experiences or happenstances that
you've
had in life.
I have a counterexample.
Okay. No, I would love to hear that. But yeah, go for it.
So Matt Velez developed a new game called Tickleball, which is a mix between pickleball and tennis.
This sounds like a thing that Ani helped him with.
I didn't ask about that. But, you know, you can just imagine you play with like a junior tennis racket, one of those orange tennis balls that's not as firm, but you don't use a paddle, but you play in a pickleball court.
Yeah.
And he used an LLM to develop this game, but in terms of like novel ideas and like out there things, the LLM suggested that if you drop the ball in the kitchen and you yell tickle, at the same time, you get a bonus point. Novel.
I mean, that's something. It is something.
I find that LLMs can be incredibly creative. So I don't buy the like, oh, only humans are creative and LLMs are just like rote machine executors. I do think that humans like Max, you may have a certain layer of taste and understanding and even like training about what other humans may like or value, that LLMs sometimes are a little sycophantic or they kind of too people pleasing to really figure out something that's novel but might be liked by humans. So I think they're not necessarily great at the curation thing, but I think they're exceptional at divergent thinking.
Totally.
You can tell it, hey, give me 15 different variations of pickleball.
Yes.
And then it gives you 15. You'd be like, actually, I want 100 instead. And it'll come up with 100 novel things that are like weird remixes. And then you'd be like, actually, number 87 is really good.
Yeah. I mean, you know, for example, I hear in the Soviet Union, the LLMs have come up with sickleball. It's like a really new... But no, I want to be clear. I agree with you. And like, look, I guess what I'm saying is I still see humans as the main characters for now. And the LLMs, if you know how to use it well, then you can like 10,000x. Someone who's already creative can become a lot more creative. But there's still that element of taste, of knowing how to prompt it, of knowing where it can help. So as an example, right? So the way that I've been increasingly using my own writing process is I have my own ideas. And, you know, I sketch out pieces and then I build from pieces on there. And all my essays, like I, you know, finished my LP update recently and similar process. And, you know, there are certain things where I'll say, okay, you know, I don't know enough about this. For example, you know, yesterday it was like, I don't know the state of the art of microgrids, which is its own fascinating rabbit hole where you can basically build what I think will eventually become macro grids, but grids that are separate from the grid. And then, you know, the conventional wisdom is you plug those in, but they're not all plugged in. So I say, okay, what are, you know, examples of microgrids that have chosen to go totally off grid? Okay, well, Grok was extremely helpful at finding all of those potentially even more obscure sources. In fact, I think it's better than search engines at finding, like, because I can kind of prompt it and be like, listen, I want the most extreme out there examples of people that are pushing the frontiers and are trying to go totally off grid. You know, here are a couple of examples of thinkers that I like that are pushing in this way. Find me others. And it was great at that. Really, really great. So in that sense, I use it kind of like if I just want to say, like, I need a quick, you know, 30-minute or 60-minute overview of the state of the art, like, give me all of those rabbit holes. And what I find myself doing is its own summary is, it's okay, it's pretty good, but the links, the rabbit holes, it can be exceptionally good at pointing towards otherwise hard to discover high quality thinking. So anyways, so that's the way I'm primarily using it. I also experimented a bit, although I haven't done this a ton yet, of just like feeding it the essay and being like, okay, here's my thinking. What do you think of it? How would you improve it? What are what are some areas you might change things? And that's also, I mean, I ignore some of it, most of it, but there are a couple of really good ideas. Like the LLM suggested is like, this is, you know, very dense. Maybe it would be good to like break it in and like have like bolded headings for each section, so it's easier to follow. It's actually a pretty good idea. I didn't necessarily like the headings it came up with.
Yeah.
I liked my own more, but that idea to put in headings came from the AI. So all that to say, I think I'm still learning how to use it as a research assistant, but it's definitely a very powerful tool there.
Yeah. I've got a technique I want to share that I think helps it. I've discovered recently helps me get deeper like that, like you're talking about. I forget if the three of us discussed it before. I know I've been an advocate with Max for a while, but did we talk about speaking to your LLM as a disruptive form?
Yeah. And I know Jack does that as well.
I find I really got into it like this past week and it's really changed the game for how I interact with LLMs. I've used this talking, you know, the speech voice mode of LLMs before, and that's different. What I'm talking about is there's these apps like the original Karpathy tweet mentioned Super Whisper. There's one called Whisperflow that I'm using. But basically, just whenever you want to type something on your computer, instead of typing, you hold down your function key and you just speak it. And what I find is I give a lot more detail. I go into directions that I might not go because of how light and easy it is to speak to the computer versus type something. And so I give a lot more detail. I go into a lot more different directions. And it's much more conversational. And I have gotten dramatically better results out of the LLM by being able to just speak to it.
And okay, so two things come to mind immediately. One, how is this different than voice mode? Like, what is this function key? Like, and what are you doing?
It's just like this is just like a third party app that I have running on Mac OS.
Which one?
It's called Whisperflow.
Okay.
So all of these are, there's a bunch of these, like Super Whisper was the one that Karpathy mentioned in the original tweet about vibe coding. Whisperflow is one that's kind of gotten popular among Silicon Valley crowds in the recent, you know, months. But they're all using the open source, open weights model, the Whisper model that OpenAI developed and opened up. And these are just like wrappers on that. And it's a Mac OS client that I use. So you can use it with any LLM you want, any text box. You can use it when writing an email. You basically install the software and then you hold down the global function key is how I have it mapped. And you just start speaking to your computer and then
that's awesome.
It transcribes what you said and inputs it into the box when you let go of the function button. And it could be into any LM, a coding thing, an email composer, whatever. But it really changes the way I interact with the computer because of how much more willing I am to give a lot of detail on my thoughts instead of trying to like first curate my thoughts into something that I'm willing to type.
Okay, so I love that. Let me throw out an objection. And this is an objection that I desperately want to solve. It's an objection I've been discussing with a lot of people in my life recently.
Mac OS clients and malware?
Both, you're getting ahead of us, but both in Bitcoin and NormieLamp. I think it's extremely important. Okay. So I love what you're saying. And I did briefly, maybe 2 months ago or 6 weeks ago when you were first, speak with your AI friend telling me, I did start chatting with Grok and we had some fascinating conversations. It led to me ordering a bunch of new books. You guys know I have a problem with books and it's flooding my house now, which is getting out of control. But because my thinking on books, by the way, is like if you ever find anything that could be just like remotely interesting, it's like you should just order it and then you build out the entire library. And whenever that book speaks to you, you pick it out later. That's like my approach, which is great until it just like, it floods your house. But anyways,
Amazon Kindle.
Yes.
Yeah, but it's not the same, man.
I agree. It's not.
It's just like anyways, that's another taste or preference, I guess. But what I started realizing, it was extremely effective. I agree. But I found myself being like, uh-oh, wait a second. This feels way too much like the early days of something like Facebook. You're like, oh, wow, this is so sweet. I'm seeing all of my friends online. This is great. Hey, here's my birthday. Hey, here's all of my photos of everything I've ever done in my life. Hey, here's, you know, my social security number. And before you know it, all of a sudden you're trapped in this dystopian hellscape where Mark Zuckerberg owns everything you do, everyone you know, everyone you own. And good luck trying to leave because the network effects are so strong, you're trapped. And even though I like of the new feudal lords and pirates battling for our human attention, Elon is certainly my favorite of them. I don't trust any of these guys at all. And so as I'm sitting there talking to Grok, I'm like, this is awesome. But like, wait a second. The more I'm chatting with you, the deeper you're getting into my actual thought. And if we thought Facebook was bad, bro, LLMs that know everything you're thinking in real time as you're chatting and are controlled by an opaque centralized server, no thank you. Like to me, everything that we've ever criticized in the Facebook world is going to be 10,000x worse.
Maple AI.
So this is where I'm getting to, Maple AI. We are fans, investors. Well, I don't think you guys, but we are in this company, which I love.
DK.
Yeah, sorry. Dude, these guys are fucking killing it, by the way. Like I'm extremely bullish.
Great.
But Maple AI, you know, I love their vision. It's basically the Apple private cloud, right? So the idea is they use the secure execution environment?
Trusted execution environment.
Yeah, thank you. And this whole concept of confidential compute, I did a podcast on Ideas from the Edge with the team. So if you're interested, you can hear that whole thing. But the gist of it is, you know, you can do things all locally, which is great, but like obviously local has limits. People end up using the cloud because it's more powerful, it's cheaper, it's better. That's how we ended up in the digital hellscape we did. But they say, okay, cool. We can give you the benefits of the cloud. It's scalable. It's cheaper. But because all of the keys are generated within a secure enclave within the server, we can't see what the hell is going on in there. And it's, you know, in theory, if you trust the hardware, and that's its own, you know, deep, deep rabbit hole, then it can't be evil, not don't be evil.
It's a signal. So, like people familiar with Signal, it's a similar model.
Yeah.
So how does it, is it using open source models only then?
So this is the problem. And so I was trying to, without doxing all of them, privacy pill people in the more normal tech world and say this is important. And they're like, yeah, we agree. This is super important. I can totally get what you're saying. Something that starts off awesome. Your friend ends up just like manipulating thoughts, stealing your data, all this. And like, oh, by the way, like if I'm a business, like if I'm a healthcare company, I straight up can't use OpenAI or one of these guys. Mm-hmm. If I'm like moderately intelligent, I'm also like terrified of using them. And so there are a lot of people that are very sympathetic to the problems. So I'm like, okay, well, then you should consider using OpenSecret, which is the, platform that this encrypted confidential compute is running on. And that's what Maple AI is built on. Problem is, like, great, how do I use Claude? And it's like, well, you can't. You can only use the open source models. And like, yeah, the Chinese ones are pretty good, but we also don't know what's like deep, deep down there. That's another concern I have. You can use the open source AI model now, Grok, I guess. I don't know if they have listed the open source version. The TLDR is like the open source models are good, but they're not as good as the closed source stuff, full stop. And so that's the trade-off. It's like, as we stand right now, do you value your not getting brainwashed more, or do you value having a better research assistant?
I have a few thoughts here. First of all, in most cases with privacy, I don't think consumers really care. But with this, I think it very much matters. First of all, there's corporations. As a corporation, you want to use these tools, but you don't want to give some other company like all of your secrets, right? But even as a consumer, healthcare, whether it be like physical health, mental health, there's just so many topics that you might want to inquire about. And like you said earlier, you're going to inquire in a much deeper way than even with Google search.
Way.
And you don't want another company to have all that information. So I think there's going to be like strong demand. If open source models today are inferior to proprietary ones, a couple of things that could happen. One, and I think we'll get into this later in the show, but there's certainly, if we're reaching a plateau with LLM development for the foreseeable future, then I would expect open source to catch up and that sort of commoditized problem, then problem solved.
Yes.
Or if proprietary maintains the edge, there's numerous competitors right now for proprietary. One that might start slipping behind might want an edge. Well, yeah. They can introduce, I mean, whether they use OpenSecret or not, or they just build it in-house. I mean, maybe that's not good for Maple AI, but they could build it in-house. So whether it's Anthropic or whoever, or one of the Chinese models.
Yeah, right? I think it's going to be the Chinese.
I guess they're already open source though, right? Yeah. So in any case, a proprietary model that is superior or at least much closer to the best could do it as well.
So another, yes. And I think that remains, that remains a great topic of conversation. And to be clear, I'm super bullish on Maple AI. I love these guys. I think what they're doing is so important. And I definitely think, and I've seen their revenue numbers, like there are people and businesses that are choosing this and like, it's real. But I'm just saying in my own, like I have every incentive in the world to use them and I probably should more as a research assistant, but the reality is Grok is great. It's just really, really good. Like it's helping, and it has all of that real-time Twitter data and context. And so as an investor in a financial research, like I want that real-time Twitter data. It's really, really good. And so it's like playing out in real time. It's like, I know this is bad for me and I know the risks and yet I'm still using. Now I'm not using OpenAI, like I'm not that crazy. But at least with Grok, you know, it's like, I'm kind of like, you know, if I'm gonna roll the dice with one of the pirates, I'll go with Elon.
Or Demis.
Or Demis, yeah. I like both. Yes, exactly. I'll go with Elon or Demis in that world. And hell, even Dario. I got to say, I was originally like very down on Anthropic. I thought they were going to be, way too woke and like safety pilled or whatever. But like, they've actually made some, like, I'll give that man, he's an alchemist, despite having fewer resources. Everyone I know in Silicon Valley codes with Claude still. So good on him. And he doesn't have that, like, I don't know. He doesn't seem evil yet. But the point is, you can't trust any of these people because they don't start that way. The Google guys, don't be evil, right? That was literally in their manifesto or like wasn't in the corporate documents.
Yeah. And I would say Google stood true to that as good as any corporation could and for as long as they possibly could.
But
and
that's
I still wouldn't call Google evil. They just, it's like the original culture has been lost, but I wouldn't call the company evil.
And I agree. Of the big tech companies, believe me, I like Google. I've always liked Google. I actually believe that the people at the top, the founders, were good people. And they probably still are. I wouldn't say that about a lot of other tech companies, but it's the incentives. But,
well, also they've left, or yeah. at least Larry has, right? Yeah. So that's why even if you believe in a founder, a CEO, someday they'll be gone.
Exactly.
And or in an early day of a startup, it's like, it's hard to imagine that, but we've already seen it with Google. Like
yeah.
Larry Page just exited the scene, right? So, and you don't know who's going to take over afterwards. So.
Yeah.
But so, I've got to say, if Demis were to take over, I'd be happier about that than some of the other competitors in the
No, Demis for sure. I mean, like that dude's a real one. Anyways, but the point is, I mean, Demis could leave tomorrow. Like the point is, I mean, this is the whole thesis of Bitcoin and Noster. Can't be evil, not don't be evil, because even the best person, you know, whatever. I mean, once you get that tap on the shoulder, Jack at Twitter, Jack is probably the best of this whole bunch. There's only so much you can do as one human being. So anyways, my point is protocols over people all day, every day. Now, the question I have is twofold. One, do you guys see, I mean, Deke, I know you're deeper in AI land, among the sort of normie AI crowd, do you see there's demand for this privacy? Like people actually understand that, or like businesses that don't reveal trade secrets? Or do you think it's just going to be the like HIPAA compliance that has to go that route? And number two, you know, what is, I mean, for example, you mentioned someone else could come and try and do what Maple AI is doing. Well, should Maple AI raise, I don't know, hundreds of millions of dollars and try and do this themselves? Should they focus still on the open source? Another path that I was actually discussing with Tony is like, you know, is there a world where you just like run an anonymizer? So kind of like a mixer for the AI, for the like, so, okay. And then that's, I guess, kind of what some of these open router type things are doing, where it's like, I want to use Claude, but like anonymize so Claude doesn't know me and they don't know who's me as well.
Can I throw in one more aspect to this discussion? Something we've been talking about with another entrepreneur is like a system of experts or what?
Mixture of experts.
Mixture of experts. Would you talk about that as well? Because I know, DK, you have some differing views there. I'm still learning, but differing from maybe others. But if that's an interesting model, that could potentially be, it's more realistic. It can run locally. Mm-hmm. So you could get your price, like for certain use cases, you could use that type of model, which can run locally, and then you get privacy.
Right.
Right. So that's another way to solve this.
I mean, you could use small models that are trained for specific purposes, but that's pretty different than how mixture of experts is more like emergent pieces, you know, sections of a model that was trained for broad-based general use. So we don't, the idea of like, let's make a specific expert for a specific purpose is not what mixture of experts is talking about. That's talking about just sort of emergently figuring out what areas of the embeddings have some sort of expertise and then routing prompts through that instead of routing them through the whole language model. But it's more like a specific piece of a larger model versus kind of a different, smaller model to train on its own.
Just to make sure I understand. So it's more at the inference level than like training a whole new model that's just smaller?
What it happens in training, but the big benefit is scalability and inference. Because like imagine you're just training a very, very large model and you're trying to just understand all of how human language works and all of how human knowledge is connected. Well, part of that is you might discover that, oh, math is a subset of how human language works and human knowledge works. And so when we see a math prompt, we've emergently discovered that there's a bunch of relevant material all in this subsection of the model. And so we don't have to take broad-based math prompts and root them, try to explore the whole space of the model, but we can just root it towards this specific thing that emerged to look like it has information about this domain. And so math is a broad domain of that, and like coding is often a broad domain of expertise, but like there isn't like a mixture of experts of like, what is Bitcoin? How does Bitcoin technology work? Let's have an expert understand that. That's not really, when people talk about MOE within the AI space, they're not talking about that fine grain level of expertise.
Okay. But I mean, I still think with respect to privacy, running a local model is one way you get privacy. Another possibility for how do you have a competitive model that can run locally? One could be just building a smaller model, but that's customized and focused on your task at hand.
Yeah.
And by the way, I haven't seen a great tool yet for like, my buddy who's kind of outside of these worlds has asked, hey, basically for what you're saying, I want to like fine tune, train, RAG, whatever the technology is. I basically just want to train my own assistant on my data privately on my computer. Is there a good tool for that yet?
To train a brand new model from scratch? Or
no, to take a model off the shelf and then whatever the technology du jour is, if it's RAG or fine tuning or whatever, basically say, hey, I want to like customize this with like all of my like personal notes information, but I don't want to like leak that to the cloud. Like, is there a good tool for that yet?
I would guess there are tools like that. I don't know offhand. I would guess like I'd look at LM Studio, maybe that, because I know LM Studio lets you run a local model on your Mac. And I have some friends who run these. They actually buy these really high powered Macs with like 128 gig of RAM.
For that reason.
Oh, good. Yeah. Yeah. My next computer, I'm going to probably get a computer in a month or so.
I need like a terabyte.
Well, you need to use the quantized ones.
Oh.
Yeah. You need to use the quantized models to get any reasonable performance. But I think if you use a quantized model with a super beefy 128 gig RAM,
I'm at the point where I'm willing and ready. Although again, this is not going to work for everyone, but like I'll, you know, whatever, give me 12 Mac minis, string those together. Like let's fucking go. Like whatever.
Get the M3 Ultra. If you're willing to have a desktop, do an M3 Ultra.
I don't have a desk, but I should get one.
So you're going to have 12 minis. You're going to carry them around with you to the sauna.
Can we explore something mentioned a few minutes ago a little bit more?
Sure.
And yeah. I mean, I threw out there that maybe LLMs are the progress of them is plateauing. I'm curious what you guys have read, heard, what your own intuition is. Do you think that that is true?
I can start. I do not. And I'll tell you why. Some of the benchmarks, whatever, maybe are showing that. Like, my philosophy on this stuff is very simple. Trust the curves. And when you zoom out, you know, I think of it kind of as it's the bell curve situation where you have, you know, the really dumb and the really smart people are like, whenever you find a fractal pattern in nature, just go with it.
Mm-hmm.
Bet along that curve. And then you always have the people in the middle. It's like, well, no, you know, you can't do that because we have the benchmarks and blah, blah. It's like, no, just trust the curves. And the one guy that I think has gotten this stuff right, more or less, that I've read, that just said it directly, is the Leopold Asperger, whatever his last name is, guy.
Asperger.
Something like that. I guess that was a Freudian slip.
That was a little Freudian slip. Yeah. Max Autist.
I do like to track the autists. And yeah, anyways. Exactly. So his report is excellent.
An apple.
His report is absolutely excellent. About a year ago. Oh, it's so good. About a year ago, he put out what was the name of that report? Situational awareness. And it was spot on. I've read that many times. I think he's basically just right. By the way, Nick Carter is always just like posting whatever Leopold's new hedge fund buys or trades, and he's just shadow trading it, which I think is a great strategy. This guy clearly knows what's up. One of the few people I've been like genuinely impressed by, and just from reading his work. And basically his whole point is just like, yeah, just trust the curves. Like, you know, we keep adding more compute. It's not slowing down. Like, it obviously requires a lot more compute and a lot more data. And those are challenges that we haven't solved, right? Like, you have to get more chips, more power, which is the biggest limiting factor right now. That's what my whole giant manifesto that's going to come out next week is all about, is like, who, you know, he who controls the power controls the AI. You know, spoiler alert, it's not us, it's China. And we need to change that. We need to change that yesterday. So anyway, so there's chips, there's the power, there's the data itself. These are all limiting constraints, but like, those are all solvable problems, right? It may take time to solve it. It may take a tremendous amount of capital, both intellectual and otherwise, but they're all solvable problems. And so then I look and I say, okay, who are the smartest people in the world and what are they betting on? Well, you know, I think my other like major investment strategy for the last 15 years is basically just do what Elon does. Turns out that works out really, really well. What is Elon doing right now? He, first of all, is a solar maxi. That's another solar and storage maxi. Another little alpha drop for next week. So Elon's betting big on build a lot of solar, build a lot of storage, go as big as humanly possible. You know, I also follow closely all the team at XAI. I'm like, that there's real signal there. And those guys are suggesting we're going to build the biggest, you know, super cluster possible. So at first they said, you know, I forgot exactly the number. It was a million GPUs in Colossus 2, which, by the way, it's also very interesting. You can see, so I'm from Memphis. You know, I always say we do it for the M. And if you track, it's no coincidence that intelligence, super intelligence is being birthed in Memphis. There's some interesting rabbit holes around that. But
as it was 35 years ago.
Exactly. Exactly. I was going to say in Egypt, but that's another rabbit hole. So you can see, I mean, you can just like track like what they're buying, the land. It was clear they're going to build solar on it because they bought 500 acres next to Colossus. Now they're doing Colossus 2 down there. Anyways, he basically said, I forgot the exact number that, you know, so a million GPUs, and then they want to do, I forget if it was 50,000. Or what the number was, but some like huge quantity of whatever the latest NVIDIA chip is it H100?
200 maybe.
200? Whatever the state of the art NVIDIA chip is, he's like, basically we're going to do some obscene number of that, which, you know, someone was asking Grok, what percentage of the world electricity is that? And it came out like 7 or 8%. Of course, just like when people, you know, bitch about Bitcoin electricity usage, exactly. That's like a terrible, the point is it's a lot of electricity usage if it's running full speed at today's efficiencies. Of course, the efficiencies are going to get way better. And like it ignores all these other challenges. But like the point is he's going to go really, really big. And then he said after that, eventually billions. So Elon's not slowing down. You see all the other, you know, labs, again, without revealing too much from the paper last week, Google has already contracted. This is a little bit, you know, not 100% confirmed, but seems pretty clear. Multiple gigawatt plus, including 1 3-gigawatt plus cluster that they're building right now. So the smart money is going big.
Slight alternative take on that.
Yeah.
I have a well-placed source at one of these companies who...
rhymes with frugal.
No.
Rhymes with Elon.
I have many, many connections, David.
Keon.
And there's a belief within, or actually that person thinks even within the overall space that it is plateauing. Hmm. So why would there be all these big, massive investments? That can be answered as well. Because right now, ChatGPT has an enormous lead in terms of brand recognition and user base. So for others, they're still trying to play catch up. And even if it's an enormous investment for what might be a short period of time where there's still an edge, it's worth that investment because the prize is so big.
Yeah.
So the two might both be true simultaneously.
Yeah, could be.
But I don't really have any other unique insights than that.
I also think we're going to get more products built. I mean, you know the bitter lesson, the writing?
Basically, you should recap it, yeah.
Yeah, I'll recap in a few short statements. Basically, like, don't worry about building products because the models are going to get better and the models will out-execute whatever great ideas you have for products. So it kind of takes the view of like, don't bother with products, only focus on models. I'm kind of summarizing, simplifying, et cetera. But outside of that, like if we do plateau, which I'm not claiming we are, my intuition is that doesn't feel like anything's slowing down to me, but I'm not actually looking at the base reality of model training today. But if we are plateauing, I think we might consider undoing the bitter lesson and think about all the products that can be built that will end up generating, like a major constraint is data. And so new products that get built can generate new data that can feed into models to make better models to do the things that the products are trying to do. So maybe that we're about to see a bit of like a product area opening that will give rise to even new abilities to generate data that becomes useful to additional future scaling. And when you start to talk about slowing down, I would ask, have you seen or played with Nano Banana yet?
No, I saw it mentioned yesterday. But
yeah,
tell us.
But it's the big new. So yeah. Google Gemini DeepMind just launched Nano Banana. I'm not going to run down the whole thing, but it's basically like an amazing new image model where you have a lot more controllability in characters and a lot more consistency across characters, and you can do all kinds of things with generating new scenes from different points of view and different types of animation and video stuff. So
do you have to use Nano coin to pay for it?
I thought it was the Google blockchain.
I thought it was like
coming too soon.
I thought it was a cryptocurrency scam.
No, Google has so far stayed out of the cryptocurrency scam business, and I expect them to get
that's coming up soon.
I thought it was a nano, nano scam.
Anyway. No. Anyway, nano. Yeah, go ahead.
Sorry, I'll let you go. Space Migration just commented and said,
"Great name.
Greetings from Seattle. Love the ideas you guys talk about. Solid as always. Thanks. We appreciate you listening.
All right. And yes, thank you for listening.
For others listening, please feel free to comment, questions, ideas, thoughts. Yeah. We're happy to share them.
Yeah, if you think we're wrong, tell us. If you think we're right, tell us. Like, yeah, want to hear.
If you think Max is wrong and Steve is right,
we love to hear that.
Do you hear DK talk more about playing with the banana?
Yeah. All right, back to your banana.
Back to your banana, DK.
Anyway, it's amazing. It's only the latest thing that dropped this week. You know, the VO3 stuff has been amazing. There's just week after week, there's always something new and amazing coming out. And so you could say GPT-5 wasn't amazing, and that's kind of why everybody's a little depressed about the model thing. I don't know, maybe, but like, I don't feel like the world is about to just hit a roadblock and slow down. I think it might pivot or bump, you know, bob and weave a little bit, but I think there's still so much new stuff and so much to do. And I think it's pretty great. Though I'll just sort of footnote on the stuff we were talking about before is I do share the concerns that Max, you were sort of raising, the kind of, you know, this can be, you know, what did you say, 1,000 times worse than kind of the Facebook era. I totally agree with that problem. I don't know how we're going to avoid it. I would like to come up with solutions. I'm not convinced that just having one layer of the ecosystem, like have these kind of good principles, is necessarily going to cause everybody to align around that. Because I think there's a challenge that the tools that we use with those models are kind of co-evolving and improving with them. So for example, I use Claude Code basically all day, every day, and it only works with Claude models. I recognize that. I recognize the sort of corruptibility and mind control that can come out of such a thing. But it actually is by far the best thing that I've been able to find after exploring a dozen or so different tools and models. And so I use it every day. I'm happy to change. I'll use something else if you come up with something better. But it's hard to say I'm going to stunt my own abilities out of some sort of a near-term desire for sovereignty or desire for privacy.
And I want to be clear. There's a couple things you bring up that are really interesting jumping off points. One of them is I think a lot of people are on the internet. It's, privacy. It's these weird cypherpunks. Like, let's be very, very clear on what we're talking about here, guys. This is the frog boiling in water. I'm not saying I want to be using mixers on the dark web and all this weird stuff. No, I'm saying just like imagine your own life. You talk to the AI and you say, hey, AI, you know, help me make this food for my family. And at first it's really good and gives you all these fresh and wonderful ingredients. And the next day, you know, and like forget like the evil insidious pieces that may or may not be there for certain players. Let's just say it follows very similar market incentives to what Facebook and Google did in their era. And they say, you know what? We really need to pay for this like $2 trillion of CapEx we're never going to get back. Our investors are finally waking up on that. And we can't find other business models. So we're going back to ads. And okay, we're going to start off pretty good though. We don't want to totally abuse the process. But like, you know what? Hershey's is going to pay us $200 million. And look, there's 20 ingredients in there. We're just going to change one. And that natural cacao that you were getting from Mexico that was sugar, no sugar in it, was good for you, good for your body, made you feel whole. Just a little bit of Hershey's. Come on, Hershey's. What is that really going to hurt you? And, you know,
just a little bit.
Yes. Solo un poco. And then all of a sudden, you know, the next week it's like, well, we got $200 million from Hershey's. You know, look, Monsanto, they're not that bad. Really, they're not that bad, are they? Nah, come on.
They have a large budget.
They have a large budget. And now they're going to pay us $2 billion. And look, man, Wall Street is that they don't give two fucks. Like we got to pay them back. But it's, look, I swear this is the last one. We're not going to do it again. And then that keeps going until, you know, 20 years out, you know, all of your recipes are brought to you by, you know, companies that now leave you diabetic, overweight, trapped in your home, plugged into a VR. Like it's a slippery slope. And so my point is, the more you have this tool, this assistant engaged in your daily life, it can get real dystopian real fast. And so,
I totally agree. But I think we need to figure out what are the ways to solve that before that crisis occurs. Because right now we're on the default path that that crisis will occur. You're seeing 10 years into the future.
I know.
I completely agree with it. But like you talk about the idea, and I actually do this myself. I subscribe to, I don't know, what, 5 or 6 of the premium LLM services. And I just rotate my use among them, not out of necessarily like a privacy concern, though I could understand why that would be. I feel like it's nice to not have all of my stuff in one place, but I'm just curious to see what's the state of the art, what's the best stuff available. And I want to understand the trade-offs of which things are better at maybe coding, which things are better at math, which things are better at drawing things. I love to understand what's the frontier of what's available. But I do notice that when I repeatedly use one, it pulls from a memory that it's created. So if you are always fuzzing and mixing your stuff, then you actually lose that. And you're going to find that people say, actually, it can reference this conversation I had last week and add that to context on the new thing we're talking about. That's better. I'm going to keep using that. So the only thing I'd say is don't just advocate for like the technology primitive to be right. You actually need to advocate for products to exist that can match or be better than the ones that are basically going to run away with your mind. So, and I don't know how that's supposed to work.
Let's talk about future solutions, right? Because to me, and I'll say this, I'm also very bearish on the products. Like I actually 100% agree with Elon on this. Like I'm to the point where it's like, I think software, like, I mean, good for the teams that are building now, they're going to make, you know, a lot of money while the, like, short-term bubble, like there is no bubble long-term, but like, yeah, that's fine. But like, I agree with Elon, like the phone or whatever hardware you're using, it's just going to become a place to run the model. You talk to it, like you don't need apps anymore. You don't need software. Like, I think that era is kind of done. And like the old world investors are just like, I mean, again, if you can, it's like the crypto, if you get out of it fast enough, you're fine. But like, if you're an investor that wants to hold for 25 years, that's not where I would be looking, right? Like I would be looking at things that are scarce. We talked about that. But anyways, but my broader point is, so how do you compete on the model game, right? I mean, it's beautiful that we have people that are building these open routers. Like, again, I think the like, I see two paths right now. One path is it's kind of the like, you know, the three paths. You use open source and you just say, you know what? We hope that they're good enough and I'm going to make that trade off. Some people will make that and maybe in the long run, it's worth it. And they're going to be the Freemans or whatever and from Dune series, that the people that still have thinking capability in 25 years, and good for them. I'm glad services like Maple exist. That's an option. Another option is we figure out a way to just kind of like confuse the system, which is the sort of like routers or like sort of mixers and anonymizers for all these models. I think that's a promising route. I think Noster and some of the companies that are building in that ecosystem could be exploring that.
Pay with Bitcoin too.
Yeah.
Let's dive into that when you're done with your options.
Totally. And then the third one that I see is, and I'm actually surprised no one has even discussed this. And I get why, because it's just like, it's a game of kings, to quote Bill Gurley, which I stuck with me. I would actually say it's a game of pirates. But just build our own. Now, how are you going to build your own? I mean, like, yeah, you need, it's, I mean, Zuckerberg is throwing down like $100 million bonuses to hire the best people. So like, how could people that believe in this ethos even dare to dream of an open source model, which as one example, instead of just open sourcing the weights, open sources the entire data set? I don't know the answer to that. I mean, one possibility I would say is, there's a lot of really, really, really wealthy people in Bitcoin. Like, imagine if you had some companies like Tether, who's already, you know, at least directionally going this direction. And frankly, a bunch of the whales that just came forward and said, whether this is for profit, nonprofit, I don't know. But like, you know what? Some of the richest humans alive are Bitcoiners. They're going to throw down, this is a project to save humanity. That's one idea. What would that look like if you could raise $10 billion from Tether and a bunch of whales, for profit, nonprofit? I don't know. But it's like literally like this is our act to try and let human consciousness have a shot at freedom.
We have a new 2026 event idea for Presidio Bitcoin.
I love it.
Right?
What's that?
I'm being serious.
Let's do it. Like, how can we build our own model?
Title the event. What is that? Is that what it is? Is it how do you build your own model?
I'm gonna.
What's the event idea? I just want to make sure.
Well, I can describe event is what Max said. I mean, it's getting together wealthy Bitcoiners to share this idea and fund it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And figure out like, hopefully there's like a for-profit model that makes it sustainable. Wealthy Bitcoiners and companies like Tether, like, I mean, that is the good news, right? Is that, and I think something that's under-discussed in Bitcoin is the fact that like some really like, frankly, kind of out there people got unbelievably wealthy from this. I mean, a lot of them probably still have the values of like, they want to see human freedom. So
I almost feel like if you want to build this product today, you should—
Not a product, build, a model.
You want to build a brand new model.
Correct. From scratch.
Okay.
So so with privacy, David, you mentioned you use a lot of different LLMs. I do as well for the same reason you mentioned. But not a primary reason we're doing that is for— it could help with privacy. I mean, but the thing is we've paid with credit card for each of those with mm-hmm. our identity, right? Yep. But what if we paid with Bitcoin and we didn't share our identity? Then mm-hmm. then the only privacy leak you need to worry about is what you're actually providing in the prompts, which yep. definitely can dox you. So we'd need to solve that. But I do think that would be a reason for people to pay in Bitcoin. So any privacy sensitive consumer, it would be great to have something that's bundled and works that way. So imagine if you're using Goose, which just integrated an open router, not open router, but a different router, but some kind of router. And imagine you have a wallet within Goose mm-hmm. or it uses NWC and connected to a wallet. So you have Goose has a budget now that yeah. you've set for it to pay. And then it farms out queries to different LLMs. And it does pay per use and pays in Bitcoin. It seems like that would enhance privacy. What do we think?
Yeah. I mean, I like the general contours of what you're describing. I worry about are you working with like a single interface and you're attaching a wallet that you control to that interface and you're sort of trusting that interface is managing your privacy concerns properly and dispatching and kind of cleansing data properly?
Yes.
And to be clear, concrete.
Oh, go ahead.
Well, this already kind of exists. If you tried Routster, it's like the model router, but on Noster. There's PPQ as well. Like they don't collect any identity. So there's no, even if they wanted to, I guess they could save your IP or something. But
I guess what I would want to see though to make it at least sort of on par with some of the best experiences is that when you issue a prompt and you get a result, you now have a bunch of context on me. What did I want? What did I get? Right? Maybe subsequent prompts on that chat session. In that, there are facts about me and what I care about. And those, the way these systems work today is those facts get extracted as part of the memory of the system. Those facts could be stored in some sort of a private repository. Maybe it's on Noster, but not publicly available. Maybe it's more like on an Noster relay, but only accessible via my private key. But those could be used then for subsequent dispatches to a separate LLM so that there's some of that context or memory gets carried. But I feel like that's one of the core things that centralized services are really good at.
It could just be stored within Goose, right?
Yeah, or just store it with your Noster identity. Like you could just create an ephemeral identity. I mean, or not. I get your point. Like you want to store the context. I mean,
you just run Goose and it's just stored on your computer and then you can encrypt it and back it up if you want.
Or you could do it in the cloud just with a Noster identity and like, hey, we don't know who this person is. We just know it's a upkey.
So but you need a tool that knows to extract those facts and save it somewhere and submit yeah. them at the appropriate times.
Goose. Like a Goose, I mean, we're speaking to a roadmap, but this would be a roadmap okay, for, yeah. for Goose. Goose is yeah, open yeah. source. It's client side. That already exists today. It just integrated a router, which I haven't used that. I've used OpenRouter, in which I had to establish a customer relationship with OpenRouter out of band. I haven't used it yet. My understanding of the new one that's integrated into Goose, it's just more seamless experience, but I'm sure you still have to like credit card, KYC. Mm-hmm. So you can imagine, but maybe like Routster or something, you can imagine one that doesn't require KYC. You can imagine Goose either integrating a Bitcoin wallet within Goose or use NWC. Either way, then you have, it has money.
Yeah.
Somehow you have a budget, you set constraints so it doesn't blow all your Bitcoin. And then it stores all of your prompts, all the results locally. It can back it up for you. encrypted, and then it uses all that information in future queries. So you can imagine all that. And usually I think consumers don't care about privacy, but as I said earlier, with this, I think there's quite a few sensitive areas where people are like normal consumers are going to care about privacy. So you could market a tool to them that's packed, turnkey, packaged up. You don't need to know any of the details I just mentioned. It just sort of works out of the box. I think it'd be marketable though.
If it is calling though, I think that it's tricky. I like all of that. I think that it's like a great kind of, it's a great direction to explore, but I'm still concerned that it's hard to know what of those facts that are backed up and encrypted should be submitted to which private, you know, state-of-the-art model. And though that can actually leak a lot of data into that state-of-the-art model that's private closed source. So how do you sort of ensure that the private data that you're submitting is not used? And I mean, honestly, it will be used. Right?
It's a good question, but that seems like a huge value add. Like you could even, like client side, it could be smart about analyzing both your prompts and the results, highlighting how you're doxing yourself.
Yeah, right.
And actually, even before you submit the prompt, be like, suggest like, can you word it a different way, and suggest that alternative wording. And then be smart about when it's combining these different outputs for some future prompt or context for a prompt, eliminating PII or whatever. So I think that seems like there's room to explore there and maybe make a dent.
I think that would be you can make a dent. Yeah.
And I would love to see, I mean, I know we talked about Goose funding open source developers and whatever, like this would be so cool if we could get like 10 people here with us at Presidio Bitcoin. We're like, I think we can make a lot of progress in person. Like this, the like fund a new model, that's a big grand dream vision. But this is something that like, I think we could like make progress on today.
I agree. Also bringing it back to maybe Mabel AI the TE model in general. Which we said today, it's a really nice privacy model, since it doesn't have access to the best models, that's a disadvantage with it. But there can be some tasks you can farm out to that, and it's totally fine, and others you can't. But it could be part of this privacy mix as well, right? Some of your prompts go to Maple AI using 5 or 6 or 7 models that they support, and that'll meet your needs. And if you ever need a, you know, beefier model, then you can go to those other models and just be sensitive with what, you know, filter, have it like auto filter what you send to it.
One other random thought on the big like human freedom model. I wonder if Apple could be an ally here. I mean, Apple is so far behind on the model stuff. I mean, their whole brand is around privacy. They're the ones even created all this like encrypted cloud tea stuff, I think, or at least they popularized it. I wonder if there would be some way to like bring them into that fold because they, maybe this is their chance.
That's a great idea. And since Presidio Bitcoin and the show is all about bridging the gap with Silicon Valley, we should try to get the 10 people here to build, and some of them should be from Apple. I think that's realistic.
One of them, I already know without doxing him, it's someone that we all know, a co-investor in a few things who was at Apple doing a lot of this stuff and is like hardcore in this world. So we could even like, who knows, maybe we could even like poach him and have him lead. Like that'd be really cool. Like to have like a privacy AI lab here at Presidio Bitcoin with like this dude's state of the art and just be like, fuck it, we're throwing down the gauntlet. Like human freedom will live on.
All right. Haley, our stand-in producer today, Haley.
He might even be listening right now. I'm not doxing you.
Give Maxim an action item there.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Raise $10 billion.
And I'm not a hater on the new model idea. I think it's worth exploring. But I do think that this line of inquiry around sort of how do you make products better is, you know, to me, it seems like a better starting point because...
I agree. I think you do both, though.
Yeah, the model stuff, I mean, who owns and buys all the GPUs and who operates them and over what time frame do you expect to make a return on that? And I think there's a lot of...
I'll provide a Bitcoin address and everyone can just send the funds there. I'll take care of it.
Yeah, it's
Steve is the trusted execution.
By the way, Bocce Ball just asked, what kind of model is this again, guys? Just tuned in. Well, you should watch what we just talked about.
Just dial back.
I'm not going to rehash everything, but like we are talking about solutions that accommodate all models. We also had a crazy idea to create a new model funded by wealthy Bitcoiners. So,
and Apple,
pretty much every option you can imagine, we have just discussed.
Yeah, we're talking about AI.
I would not be surprised. By the way, do you remember Global Crossing?
No.
Yes.
What's that?
This was like
Max is too young.
Max is too young. So this was, you know, this company is huge, public. Yeah, something like that. Sometime around then. It's closer to the 70s than it is to now. Okay. But it was probably what, late 90s, I think. Yeah. And it was just like huge infrastructure investment, like, you know, dark fiber under the internet and massive. I think they went public and had a massive IPO and raised tons of capital. And ultimately then the thing blew up and there's nothing to see for it except that these, you know, this dark fiber exists. It's under sea. And now it's okay. And then it became very cheap to acquire because like everything around it blew up. And I'm not predicting that happens to every LLM company today, but I do think that LLMs may have a somewhat similar characteristic where like there's tons of investment going in. There's just like the nature of capitalism and bubbles, you know,
and markets. Yeah.
I think just it's fine. It is what it is. It's how you move society forward. But it could be that a lot of the billions of dollars being spent on model differentiation ends up looking like Global Crossing someday. And we're like, hey, glad we have it. But that's just base how human language works. And we just take it as a given as very cheap and commodity. And then it's these other layers of building that are actually where the value happens. I kind of feel like that's, to me, it feels like that's kind of where it goes. So
it's a pretty good, I think it's plausible.
But I want to make two points on this because I think this is actually very important. Number one, this might be the kind of thing that's just going to happen naturally, right? So for example, China is certainly going to try to do everything they can to like drive the cost of the model down to zero and then win on the hardware where they're dominant. And that's great. And I've seen a lot of people be like, yeah, like that's awesome. Like in a weird way, we're like very aligned with China on that. However, I personally am more skeptical than a lot of those voices I've heard because I'm like, what the hell is in the Chinese models? I am not at all convinced, and you cannot convince me there's not a poison pill in those models. And unless I can see the entire data set and trust it, which, by the way, probably not going to trust China, I don't believe that that's... I think that it could happen the way you're saying, but unless these guys, for whatever reason, and maybe one of them, like Anthropic, will slip far enough behind, they say, fuck it, we're throwing the whole Mary, or even Facebook, and we're going to just like show all the data. But again, you have to trust them. And so it could happen on its own, but I'm not sure. And even if it does, like the dark fiber thing, that was still a like net benefit to humanity. Is there a role where, yeah, you try and productize it, you try and make money on it, but like the investors frankly don't care. Like it's like, we just want this thing to exist. We're an open source. If we lose all of our money, like fine. Like this is in the same way that, you know.
But in a sense, like DeepSeek has already kind of done that. They spent billions of dollars. Why not just, that's how the English language works. Why not just use that and then build on top of it?
Because what I'm saying is I don't believe that you can trust DeepSeek. And like, for example, like if there... Could there be a poison pill?
Maybe because it's from China.
Correct.
I would guess, I mean, there certainly could be problems. I would guess there's some, you know, like if I were to allocate capital towards this, I'd rather than say train up a new competitive model, I'd allocate capital towards, there are techniques I know of a specific major AI lab, which has part of the team expertise is their ability to kind of microsurgically change something deep within the model and understand where everything is and make a change when they need to. So they don't have to rerun a training run, which can cost billions of dollars, but they can actually have a crack team go in and sort of do this microsurgery on some of the weights or embeddings. And so I would rather say take the training model that DeepSeek did and build a layer to be able to do that kind of microsurgery on it to figure out if there are these poison pills in it.
Maybe. And I think that's a very worthwhile avenue to explore and sort of worth like this is beyond my area of expertise, but my like just initial, if we're shooting big, I think you do all of the above. My initial slight pushback on that is I would argue for my friends that are sort of stayed there in LLM land and like training them, no one really knows how this stuff works. And yeah, you can probably get to some degree, but like, I think it's still alchemy right now. And so my dream world would be we could see from ground up this thing built in open. Everything is open. I mean, that requires raising crazy amounts of capital, building a team, all these really hard things. So like maybe that's too much and what you're saying is more realistic. But like we're shooting for the stars, like let's shoot for the stars.
But
yeah. And one more thing I want to add, because I think this is super important. I think the other super critical thing that we can't lose sight of in all of this, and I'm actually going to amend my essay, having had this conversation with you guys right now. And hopefully by next week, we'll be able to announce the another little alpha type one summit coming up here at Presidio Bitcoin as well, thinking about radical energy infrastructure. I think that's going to be extremely important as well. The radically decentralized energy infrastructure for both training and serving. Because the other big challenge is, imagine you do raise all this money and you can do, okay, cool, we can train a new model, we can serve the new model, but like you're doing it in these like giant, you know, eventually terawatt scale AI factories, right? Like, like wonder if that's like an easy thing to just shut down. The answer is yes, right? And so what I think is also very interesting is it's very important that we as a community figure out how to fund and incentivize as much decentralized, eventually training, that's harder, but serving infrastructure as well. So that could be, you know, obviously, you know, many AI factories powered by solar and batteries completely off grid. I think there's strong economic reasons that's going to happen. But I also think as part of this like freedom AI push, that's as important as well.
All right. It's getting too late for my comment. So I want to get my comment in. I didn't understand. So like with undersea cables, we know how to verify that the information being sent over them is trustworthy. With software, we have the notion of reproducible builds. So they're not super popular right now, but it is possible to do a reproducible build so that I can independently verify the software I'm running.
Mm-hmm.
Is what's open source and published. I don't see how to independently verify an AI model, even if all the data is published, because you weren't there when they did the training.
Right.
And how can any human being independently verify that the training actually took that data input? I don't. And similar with hardware.
Yeah.
How do you independently verify that the H100 doesn't have some kind of backdoor or something, or poisoned in some way? And
I mean, I would say that's true though. Are you tracing the global crossing dark fiber to where it hits the junction that connects to the rest? Like, you are trusting, right? So,
but what's an example of like if I send, you know, data over that line and someone on the other end receives it? What's an example of how it could be tampered?
No, I think that's fine. My point is more that these models are all probabilistic. Like that's the feature, not the bug. It's a feature that is probabilistic. And it's, I'm not proposing that, like the OpenAI model will eventually become open source or something. I'm more saying, I think a lot of what these models are really good at doing is figuring out how English language connects ideas and concepts together. And that core idea can be built again and again many times, and then eventually kind of get commoditized, and then the commoditized one could be open. So it's not like you need to have OpenAI's actual training run. You just need a bunch of forces forcing the state of the art to move forward, and then hopefully an open source, open weights thing can catch up. And we probably do need better like interpretability tools. So that's one of the things that yes, do all of the above plus 10 other things, agreed, but also disagree, because like you have to allocate time and attention and resources and stuff.
But my point is, even if it's open, like we still don't know if that's the model we're using.
So we need some sort of interpretability. We need new tools. And I think those are tools I would advocate for. Let's have great interpretability tools. So if we do have an open source model, we can find the poison pills. Like to me, that seems like a productive contribution to the world that doesn't exist and that could help us reach the goals we're talking about, versus, hey, let's go redo the thing that already exists. Like we could go rebuild the dark fiber. We could go rebuild.
Okay. I mean, that sounds really hard to do, but okay. I agree. That's an interesting. Well, by the way,
we haven't talked about any topics yet.
Well, we want to talk about, yeah. Well, okay, we move on. Let's move on.
One last thought on that, which is I agree with you, but I also don't necessarily agree that's even possible. if it is going to be possible, it's probably going to be AI agents doing it. And so that's like a really interesting area, is like having the AIs do the auditing. It's not going to be.
But then
humans.
How do you trust the AI that's doing that?
Well, then you would have, exactly. And then you say, well, we have like a whole bunch of these AIs, and if you have it from 10 different companies and whatever. But my point is, like, I'm not sure that, like, at least given our current physics, that's like, that's possible.
Mm-hmm. So let's talk about Google announced Google Cloud Universal Ledger in kind of a unique way. The executive in charge of it posted on LinkedIn describing it.
Strong start.
it seemed like a little bit
of
like...
Is that the only place it went out?
Yeah. And there were some articles written and tweets. But it seemed like a little bit of FOMO from Stripe and Circle's announcements. But we've had three solutions announced from... We talked about Circle Arc and Stripe Tempo in a previous mm-hmm. episode, and now Gluck.
It's called Gluck?
It's Geekle. Google Cloud Universal Ledger.
Google is not allocating
Google Cloud Universal Ledger.
It's Demis is not working on this project, I can tell.
Oh, yeah, not Gluck.
The G and L are not next to each other. Yeah. Google.
But I think my reading of it, it's not a blockchain. It's just a database hosted by Google.
Yeah.
So
much like every other blockchain that's not Bitcoin. Interesting. Okay.
Well, no, much more efficient, because other like blockchains are very inefficient databases. This presumably is a super efficient database, because they don't, only Google controls it. Only Google hosts it. And it's like it seems like, you know, they're observing the rapid rise and growth of stablecoins, trillions of dollars being transacted and growing rapidly. And this is their entry into this. And so it's super interesting to see Google enter the fray. It seems to me like it's a credible option, because like why do you need the decentralization that Bitcoin has when you're just hosting dollars issued by centralized entities that are heavily controlled by the US? So Google might have the smartest strategy in the space, because like everyone else is like developing their own layer one or using Solana or Ethereum, super inefficient databases, and Google just like, let's just use a traditional database.
Fuck it, let's be honest. Okay, so
they do call it a blockchain, even though it is just
database,
right? Oh, they don't. Okay,
some people have called. I don't know if it was in the original.
They don't. No, they actually have. So they have a. I sent it out to you guys. You should look at it. They have a fairly lengthy post describing their view of the entire space, and I searched for the word blockchain, and it's referenced three times, but not describing their product.
Oh, okay.
Although I think critically, it does claim in there that they are quote credibly neutral.
Whatever
that means.
I think credibly neutral means something different than what we mean when we say credibly neutral for Bitcoin. I think the neutrality is not that it's a neutral database. It's that they are a neutral player.
Yeah, I get your point.
Among the partners, there's a very few small set of select partners who are allowed to contribute to it. And they are not in, at least today, they're not in direct competition with these partners. They're credibly neutral from a infrastructure perspective, but not from like a decentralization or sovereignty perspective.
So I just want to give a quick shout out. If you guys haven't seen this or read this yet, Alan Farrington's piece, A Half-Baked Thesis on Stablecoins. Have you guys read that yet?
I haven't read it. I think you shared it in the chat, right?
Read it.
I need to catch it.
We can discuss it next week. I got to give a shout out to Alan. Alan is like, once again, right? I mean, look, very, very high level. I think this is what we're kind of getting at 2 weeks ago when we were talking about Tempo. If you look at, and this goes back to my old days when I used to be at a fund investing in crypto, and I'd always ask, you know, the central question. I'd be like, okay, well, you know, if you are sacrificing decentralization, so Bitcoin is completely decentralized and therefore is a giant pain in the ass to run. Like, there have been battles fought over the megabyte size of the blocks, like all this stuff to keep it decentralized, right? And so what every other crypto project has realized over time is, hey, we can get easier, you know, faster throughput, more throughput, all the stuff. We make it a little bit more centralized. And so increasingly, then you have Ethereum, which is sort of decentralized, but like sort of not. And so it ended up in this Frankenstein state. And then it starts getting outcompeted by Solana, which is basically just like, well, we've got, I don't know how many it is, 10 nodes. And like, we're decentralized, you know, whatever. And then they get outcompeted because like, who's the number one stablecoin ledger that's doing all this? Tron. I don't even know if, does Tron even pretend to be a blockchain at this point? Maybe. But they're essentially a centralized database. And then you've got, you know, if you go back to 2019, I think one person whose take I would value very highly on this is David Marcus. Because David Marcus was at Facebook, Libra. That was their project where they were going to try and issue a stablecoin on their database. And why is the reason that they didn't do it? Regulation. Because the government and all these other players are not like, wait a second, hold up. We're going to let a private company controlled by Mark Zuckerberg, who the Senate is very familiar with, control the giant database of transactions happening in the world? No. And that gets shut down. What has changed since then? And I actually, this is like, I found myself literally completing Alan's sentences in a podcast about his paper, is like the only innovation, and to be clear, stablecoins are better than dollars, but that just shows how antiquated and backwards dollars and the dollar system is. And that's because it's a heavily regulated field. Therefore, you can't have freedom like the internet, which allows innovation to happen quickly. So that's why it's so backwards. People are realizing this stablecoin thing, which increasingly is moving from sort of like blockchain in name only to just centralized databases, are better than the old world. Yes, because the old world was built in like Cobalt in 1970 or 50 or whenever. So like, yeah, these are better. But like the only innovation here, as Alan said, is literally just confusing regulators. It's like throwing so many buzzwords and crypto and blockchain that people are like, yeah, like we should probably allow this thing. And then to their credit, it got adoption. And because it got adoption, all of a sudden, it's like, well, now Tether using Tron, it seems kind of too big to shut down. It's like massive. And like, oh, by the way, they're buying their treasuries. Yeah, blockchain, crypto, knock yourself out, guys. Keep buying the treasuries. And then even more, you know, then you have the Trump administration come in, and the Trump administration, you know, there's pros and cons. They're, you know, more open and freedom to certain things, but it's like kind of in a nihilistic way, in my opinion, where it's just like, fuck it. We're going to launch our own tokens, coin, knock yourself out. There's no like ideology behind this. And so now there is this like window of time where, in the way I see it, what Facebook and David Marcus tried to do in 2019 and got shut down, there's kind of this window where it's like, we can just launch a database. And in the old world, that would have been heavily regulated. And maybe it still will be, maybe it won't. But
so it's a window of time during the Trump administration, and then who knows in 3 years.
Exactly.
But the Genius Act was passed by Congress.
Yep.
So that will survive. Or I mean, it's much harder to overturn that with the new administration. So that's different. But I mean, I'm interested in talking about the thesis where tech companies, fintech companies, use this to usurp banks, right?
Yeah.
And so we talked a little bit prior to the show about finding ways to share the yield from the treasuries backing stablecoins. And the Genius Act explicitly doesn't allow sharing that yield with customers, at least directly. I haven't read the specific language about how tight or loose that language is. But I'm sure that language was introduced because banks wanted it there. Because banks don't want to see people switch from the bank, traditional bank, to this new system. But of course, the Stripes and Circles and Googles of the world, Robinhoods, would obviously love the trillions of dollars flow from banks to themselves. And then the U.S. government, I forget which of you said it, but, you know, definitely likes the Tethers and Circles of the world being some of the largest buyers of U.S. treasuries in the world. That's what feeds our system. And like countries like China are buying much less U.S. treasuries. So who's the new buyers? So what do we think about that? Like, how realistic is it for these tech companies to overtake banks through stablecoins or like what Google's doing?
I mean, I'll outline a specific kind of example that I was discussing in the group chat, and I want to hear kind of more what you guys think about this. So I think Genius Act, I think, is very clear that sharing yield to the holders of the stablecoin is disallowed. And but we know that like the yield that you can get on treasuries is probably, there's probably more juice in the rewards that you could share than like a traditional credit card interchange fee, Is that true? Do we think that's true, or we mostly believe that's the case?
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah. So that's why there's a threat, right? Like, yield on treasuries is better than interchange, and the rewards programs to end users come from the interchange fees that merchants pay. And so yield would be a juicier pot to pull from. So Genius Act, as you said, specifically disallows that yield being shared. But in a sense, these are businesses, they have balance sheets, they have all kinds of partnerships and distribution deals. So I think I forget who mentioned it in the chat, but the specific example that seems very credible to me is that the Genius Act disallows sharing the yield, but the issuer of the stablecoin does a distribution deal with, say, a Robinhood, right? It's like kind of a forward-looking thing. And they're like, hey, for every customer you acquire, everybody who holds our stablecoins, we get this much in value. And then it's like the distribution partner who actually gives the benefit. So the thing that you get from your credit card company today that's paid by your interchange fee, your Robinhood chooses to give you gold or some made-up something or other, some other kind of rewards program that's effectively backed out of the stablecoin yield or some share of the stablecoin yield. And that goes directly to consumers where they're getting the benefit of the yield while skirting the letter of the law.
Right. And it wouldn't be marketed as, oh, you're getting X percent interest on your deposit. Exactly. It would be framed a very different way, but you're effectively getting the same amount of money.
Collect these points and you get a trip to Hawaii.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, man.
Yeah. So that seems like we already know the distribution deals happen and the profits are shared. That's known. Mm-hmm. And then these consumer incentives, I think, undoubtedly will occur as well.
And I think the JP Morgans of the world are not going to be the first to do those kinds of things. I think the Robin Hoods of the world are.
And the JP Morgans of the world are also not just going to like sit by idly though, right? So I think there's a couple of interesting points here. One, yes, this is a great observation. Like, tech companies can move fast. They see an opportunity. They're seizing it. Good for them. I get why Stripe's doing it. I get why Google's doing it. I think again, it's like it reflects on the sort of the like sad nihilistic state of the world, but like it is what it is. What I think is more interesting though is two things. One, what this is effectively doing and what you're seeing playing out is, you know, we thought the battle was with the central bank. No, it's like, to your point, it's with the banks. And so in some ways, this is actually a very good thing systemically, because what is Tether with, you know, getting all this yield on their treasuries? They're a fully reserved bank. They're just a bank, but they're fully reserved in theory. Like, I know you can't prove it, audit it, whatever. But like, what's interesting is like, you're basically—
It doesn't claim that it's okay to not be fully reserved.
True. But exactly. And what's interesting is
the current system claims it's fine to not be fully reserved. Tether claims we are fully reserved, and we don't know if that's true or not, but like at least it assumes that it should not be fractional.
Exactly. And it shines this kind of like really fascinating light. And it's so funny to watch all of this play out. And like, again, read Alan's piece. Like, he's so right. It's because like you're watching kind of like all of these old fintech players and stuff who are very sophisticated in the world of business, but just do not understand money. And this is the problem with Silicon Valley with Bitcoin for forever. They get tech, they do not understand money. Like, they'll never understand why gold is ever viable. Or eventually they will, but it's going to take another decade to play out. So we're kind of watching this like almost like slow motion car crash happening where they're all like, hey, like really interesting. We can just hold the treasuries. Like, why didn't everyone do that? And then it's like this bank and you're kind of like, you know that little meme where it's like a little Muppet and you're like, hey, you weren't just making up money out of thin air, JPM, were you? And then the little Muppet looks over and you're like, what? And you realize he only had 10% reserves in the first place. And that's like, literally that's what's playing out. And then eventually they're going to go, well, how does that work that you can like only have 10% reserves? What if you blow up? And they're going to shine the light on the Federal Reserve and it's going to be like, wait a minute, you weren't just making stuff up out of thin air, were you? And the Federal Reserve Muppet's going to look over and be like, and then everything comes back to Bitcoin. So that's one way I see the next 10 years playing out. But the other thing that I think is really important is, and this is what makes me very bullish on Bitcoin and Litecoin, is the internet versus intranets. The challenge these guys are all going to run into, in my mind, and maybe Google is in a better spot, but I doubt it, is credibly neutral. If Stripe has a chain and JP Morgan's just not going to sit there, like Jamie Dimon or Jamie Dimon's not going to sit there and just like take this, like he's going to come out and launch his chain. And then Google's going to have theirs and Google's credibly neutral. Like, well, who trusts Google? Is Facebook? Absolutely not. Like all of these guys, what I think we're watching, it reminds me, we're almost like watching corporate blockchains play out in 2017. They're all going to launch chain and some of them are going to get along and like work together, but most of them are not. And there's going to be a lot of people who are like, dude, I'm never, JP Morgan, I'm never hooking up with Wells Fargo. Facebook, I'm never hooking up with Google. Apple's just going to be like, fuck all y'all. Like, I'm sitting this out. And so then you start asking the questions like, well, then who's going to market make between them? I'm sure Bridge is today, but like that requires, again, these are all permissioned. Every party has to agree to be a part of that. And if when you have ones that don't, then how are you going to get the exchange between those? It's going to be extremely inefficient, extremely complicated. And this is going to take multiple years to play out before everyone in Silicon Valley realizes, oh shit, the way to do this is to plug in the internet, Bitcoin Lightning.
But I agree with that. But I still don't think they're acting dumb. I think they can make a ton of money over the next 10 years. Like the dollar is not going away in the next 10 years. I think it's a good thing. Disrupting the banks across different angles is good.
Yeah.
So getting tech and fintech companies in here to potentially, disrupt banks, I think that's great. I do agree though that it'll play out the way you're talking about, like partnership here and here, and it's just a subset of it is basically recreating what already exists, but they can make a lot of money, and then because it will just recreate what already exists, Bitcoin will just keep strengthening, keep being this global financial network, and the companies that are betting on it,
exactly,
like Block and Lightspark and like Lightning Labs, Tether, they benefit if it plays out like we just said. They benefit because over the next 5 years, all those companies will just further develop their assets, strengthen, build great products, great customer experiences,
expertise,
business models, expertise, and all the other tech companies will then realize, or they'll make a lot of money, but then they'll still be starting at zero in 5 years to get on Bitcoin.
You laid it out perfectly. And so when you say it's smart, it depends. Depends on what your time horizon. Like if you're just kind of coming in, like how do we plunder as much as possible? Like let's put it this way. Silicon Valley is a very long Stripe, a much longer Block in this world. Sure, Stripe's going to make a hell of a lot of money and just like kind of like raid the cupboard while they can. Meanwhile, Block is becoming a giant in the background that like is betting on the future and will be around in 50 years.
Most disagreements in the world come down to a difference in timing.
Yeah. Just like the crypto people and the crypto VCs, some of them made a killing in 2017 and 2018. Multicoin, one of the best performing funds of all time. How many of their tokens have any traction ever? Zero. And so it's just like, I mean, play fiat games, win fiat prizes. If you're that money hungry, enjoy in the short run. Meanwhile, companies that are building for 2100, we'll see you there.
All right. I think we need to wrap. That's a good way. It's a good place to wrap it.
Great
too.
Wrap.
Yeah, Max and I are agreeing with each other. We laid out a vision. There you go.
Love it. All right. Let's go.
Till next time.
Good chat, guys.
Yeah, good to see you.
All right. Bye-bye.
Man. Oh, still alive. Bye, guys.